This is an iHeartRadio New Zealand podcast.
So how long are you in Italy for?
Another 10 days, I think.
So what town are you in at the moment?
Oh, there's Rapallo's here and then Santa Margherita's just over the hill.
Right, look at that. You've just become the most hated man in the show.
I can't see you, but I can hear you, which is perfect, really.
Yeah, if you sit close, we can still see the view behind you. The view's not going to change.
I can't tell where I am in the thing.
Okay. Yeah, Joe, about there down, you'll be right. Sit down, right, yeah, perfect. Yep, that's even better. Cool. Great.
Okay, mate, doors.
How long did it take you to get from Buenos Aires to where you are in Italy?
It was a fleeting 4 day, 86 hours or something like that.
What happened?
Well, we got stuck in Buenos Aires because there was some fog, and in terms of trying to deal with some competent folk to fix things, it was I reckon it was the equivalent of being at Nandi Airport if there were 5,000 people shoved through it at the same time and it was on fire. That was the sort of general feeling of chaos and
complete
lack of control. And the thing is, when you spoke to somebody and said, look, you're the manager, is there any chance of helping? Because I've got they'd go, yep. And then they'd freak out, start speaking in Spanish and walk off and see somebody else. And so if I did that once, I did it 15 times. It was actually quite funny in the end. You had to sort of have a couple of beers and,
oh, do you want to know what's been happening in the world of sport?
Yes, please.
You've come to the wrong place.
Yeah. We're hoping you can tell us.
Yeah. I've gone online.
There's a whole internet thing, Google.
Did we win the second test in the rugby?
Yeah, we won the second test in the rugby. Played well, actually.
Real good, yeah.
Yeah. You happy with the All Blacks?
Oh, yeah. Cool. It's best they've looked in 10 games.
Fabian Holland played well. Yeah, it was a good performance, actually.
Fantastic.
But then in the Test cricket, Australia got the Windies out for 27, which is just one more than the world record lowest score, which we have, of 26. 27, and Stark, I think, got 6 wickets for like 9, got 3 wickets in his first over.
Oh, that's really disappointing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Disappointing. I bumped into an Australian in the lift.
Did you talk about the cricket?
No, they were just, that big brother thing. Said, oh, we're part of Australia. I'm like, Brizzy. No, it's nice. It's nice.
How close said, is that water behind you? Could you, do a bomb off the railing there and hit the water, or are you a little far off?
I'll give it a go, but that'd be the last thing I did. I'd sort of land on the deck.
Oh, I'll wait till the end of the show then,
having breakfast. Yeah, well, I prefer to do it before the end of the show. It's a disaster, the show. Might as well jump early.
Talking about, so Australia played the Lions this weekend in the Test, which is obviously a big deal. And I was looking back, you beat the Lions when you were playing for Otago.
Yeah, long, long time ago. It was we were lucky. We had a couple of we got their Test side, which was a big challenge for us, and that crowd and the need in it, at Carroll's book was so mighty that. And the boys were a bit loose, and Gordy Hunter, who was a madman as a poke, and so it all just sort of came together on that day.
Do you remember the game at all?
I remember Guscott and Carling and Underwood on the wing and Gavin Hastings at fullback. So I remember that it was an amazing side, and they had Barnes at first five, so an amazing team, and so we knew we were up against it, but that's all I kind of remember. I don't even remember the score.
Who were you marking? Do you remember? Guscott?
Carling. Will Carling.
Oh, Carling.
Will Carling, I think.
Was he on the wing?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, you played first five in that?
No, centre.
Oh, wasn't Carling? You didn't end up at first five.
No, Carling was a centre and so was Mark.
I thought Carling was.
No, he ended up at Princess Diana's house, eh? So.
Now, for the audio, because I realised last week, because you could only listen to us, I thought I need to up our game in the audio podcast thing. So a little bit more work in the audio space. Tell me, each of you, what would you do to make sport more fun? Start with you, Macca.
Roids. like legalize roids and let people just get massive and strong and fast. And it would very quickly, sort of like MMA's done to traditional boxing in a way, it would very quickly surpass the viewership numbers and the enthusiasm when you're seeing people just explode and do things in a much greater, faster, stronger way. Roids.
So all sports with roids or just athletics?
Well, no, it's just an option. It's an option. Just if you want to really reach your potential for a very short period of time, then, you know, do it legally. It would be legally, wouldn't it? You know, I mean, it's all happening all over the place, but make it legal and just let them fly.
Which is an interesting theory, but it could cause a lot of people to die.
Well, it's a decision you make, isn't it? You know, there's a lot of things that'll make you die, Rick. And, I mean, you're participating in a number of them. And that's your decision as an adult.
Yeah.
You know?
What about you, Lana?
I'd have to do something with the umpires and referees, I think.
Or get rid of them. Like, have no umpires or referees in sport.
Potentially.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah.
Or have a sniper on them at all times, you know, so at any point. Something.
A sniper on the referee.
Yeah, just, and they know it. They can see the dot on the, they can see the red dot on them the whole time, and the, you know, it'll make them think.
Just an electric shock collar.
Yeah. Sort of, text now. Do you blow the ref up? Yeah. And everyone's going.
Everyone's there. So it's green light, red light thing, you know, and once it gets, you know, too far one side to the red, it's, you know.
Imagine the TMO booth be blowing up the whole time.
There's a lot of death in the ideas so far.
No, this wasn't death, just a little bit
That's where it ended up.
Responsibility.
Though. That's where it ended up. What would you do, Lee, to make sport more?
I'd be much like Macca, actually. It'd be drug related, but I would make it more for the viewers, not the people competing.
Right.
So everyone in the crowd can be on free, legalised party drugs. It didn't really matter what you were watching, you'd still be having a great time. You know what I mean? It'd be like, you know. Could be tedious.
That way the refs wouldn't get blown up as often.
So everyone's really mellow, so they don't kill the referee.
Well, it depends. If you're having weed, you'd probably think it'd be a great laugh, and everyone would just say let's blow them up. You know, and if you got that happening with enough of the chortle around the stadium, boom, there could be like about 30 refs in one game.
Can I just summarise?
So good, let's blow the next one up.
Can I just summarise? So
imagine being the 30th guy coming out of the corridor going, oh, Jesus, they're all on pot and they're going to blow me up. This is
Just to summarise, we can have a sport where everyone's roided up so they're capable of amazing athletic events. And the referee is on total edge because he could get shot or blown up at any stage.
I think blowing up's more spectacular.
So blowing up, the referee could get blown up at any stage, but the crowd is going to be mellowed out.
It's just magnificent. So, I mean, who wouldn't want to be in that event?
Can I add something to that?
No.
It's a wild card, a bit like the gladiator stuff, and it was getting boring. Trap doors open up and lions and that jump out. So it could be in the middle of a cricket match.
Yeah.
You know, and the lion jumps out, they've got a, you know, like gladiator.
And also, I reckon it'd be bloody great if you had a plane that came over the top and dropped like a flower bomb, like Gary Knight, but it's not a flower bomb, it's a flower beanbag. Like, boom, you know, it could take out three people.
All right, now we were going to have our first guest tonight, Nico Porteous, but I couldn't actually organise all of you at the same time as him. So I got you all to send me some questions, and this is how it played out. Right, welcome, Nico, to TAB Sports Cafe, this special feature called the Salizzo Files, where I actually managed to get rid of everyone else, and just you get the joy of talking to me directly.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So first question, aren't you a little bit young to retire?
Yeah, I am. I am a little bit young to retire. And to be honest, it's like, although it kind of is retirement, it's not retirement. Like, I'm still really pushing to ski, like, at my highest level and still pushing myself. It's just I'm retiring from the competition side of things.
So what are you going to do? If you're not going to compete, if you're not going to sort of prepare for that four-year cycle of the Olympics, what's going to keep you busy?
Yeah, so there's actually a lot that keeps me busy outside of training. And I'm lucky that in our sport there's a lot of other avenues around skiing that you can sort of have a career in, and one of those is filming and you know, making video projects and short movies and yeah, videos that live online. Yeah, and so that's something that will be taking up majority of my time now. And rather than working in a 4-year cycle, just working in a year long cycle on creating those sort of videos.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Nice color codes.
We're just going to critique this, Lana, aren't we? We're going to come in and critique the Salizzo files.
Yeah.
I think your first question was, are you too young to retire?
Yeah.
Are you ever too young to retire?
I'd throw the question back at you. Are you too old to still be doing this? You know what I mean? What gives you the right to ask that? Surely.
Yes. He's a great man, isn't he, Nico?
Yeah.
He looks like your great grandson.
He does a little bit.
Yeah, great being the operative word.
Any feedback for you, Macker, on that first part of the interview before we go on?
I actually quite enjoy Nico. I think he's amazing talent, and I've seen him once or twice down in Dunedin. He probably hasn't seen me, but I've seen him. It's not creepy. It was once at a bouncing trampoline thing, and he was doing flips and stuff, and it seemed to be a really positive young fella. So it's amazing your lifespan in that sport, eh? It's very much for the young, for the youth.
Yeah.
But he's doing good things in a really cool part of New Zealand, so hats off.
Well, yeah, can we go back to the Salizzo files? Are you okay? Like, I think a lot of people really enjoy this segment.
Oh, is it still going? Is it still
that, yeah,
we're pre-recorded.
We're only 5% through. Press play.
Oh, okay, great.
Is it true that you started to be coached as a skier at the age of 6? Is it? That's what Wikipedia said.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't say it started to be coached. That's when I had like lessons, I would say. I would say it would be one step up from lessons. So I guess, yeah, you could call it coach, but it was for like a week of the season.
So when did you actually, when did it go from having ski lessons like most of us had to actually starting to think, I'm going to do this as a competitive sport?
probably 6.5. No, it was about, it was probably when I was, I guess, 10 or 11.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, the rest of us at 10 were just, I was just hitting puberty, but that's a whole different story.
I don't think you shouldn't be discussing that with you know, your grandson. Maybe you should be.
What, puberty?
Well, I suppose it's I suppose it's one of those granddad things.
One of those moments.
This is an interview. It's not a granddad, great-grandchild conversation. This is an in-depth interview with an experienced sports broadcaster and an Olympic gold medalist.
You don't have a lot of qualifications on the snow or on skiing. I mean, last time I went skiing with you, you ended up in the bloodbath coming down, remember?
Yeah, I know. Stretcher. But you also remember that was because we were filming and you said, can you go down in this? And you made me look bad.
You did come off a few times.
Yeah. I've been skiing with Lana. I'm a good skier. What?
Pardon?
I'm a good skier.
You're scary. You're scary when you're behind the wheel of a vehicle.
Yeah.
But when you're on skis, you're just dangerous. I mean.
Yeah. Would you rather drive with Rick or ski with him?
Well, if I had a choice, I'd probably do neither. Mm. You know, our friendship goes so far, but there's two things that I'd,
wouldn't do.
You wouldn't drive up the mountain with him. No.
Don't drive up the mountain.
Are you a good skier, Macca?
I prefer you not to fall on me. You know, so I'd probably go a car.
If you feel like that, imagine how I feel.
Yeah.
So when those walruses onto the ice, when they come out of the water.
Hey, maybe we should catch up a bit more of my interview. Press play.
Winning the gold medal is a pinnacle for most people for their life. You know, like you've done it, at 16.
Look
or
at the animation on my face. That's a good interview.
Yeah. No, it was 20 for gold and 16 was bronze.
So what are you going to do to make sure that you've still got things to achieve in your life?
And that's something that I've honestly had to come to terms with in the past year is that, like, I don't think much will be up with that. I think the only thing that would top that would be marriage or having a kid. You know, like, I think that'll just far succeed any of that in terms of that external validation and success, whether it's, podium or winning or, something like that. I can't see much topping that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's true, actually. And our best skier amongst us is Lana. And she's got this theory that for New Zealanders training on the New Zealand conditions where it's a little bit icier and not quite as flash as it is overseas makes us better skiers. What do you reckon about that theory?
I reckon that's partly true. And I think Like I think we're very lucky to have like such an amazing support network down here, like with Cadrona and all they've done for the freestyle side of things and skiing over the recent years, and then also the support from High Performance Sport and Snow Sports New Zealand. I think that's been something that has really like catapulted New Zealand's success, and I think we've seen that, and especially in this past season with so many impressive results in the snow sports.
I reckon her theory is we have to often we have to ski on pretty icy, shitty conditions, and that just makes you a better skier because you don't have the sort of beautiful powder around, So this what about that theory?
It makes you rely on having big nuts, and having balls, to go and try stuff when maybe the snow's a bit firm or, but I think that is definitely a good theory, I would say.
So, are you happy with the answer to your question?
Well, they're both very accurate. So we do have world-class facilities here, but we do, and it's great that we can, they can ski off-season everything, that you get a year-round training process. But I do think that the skiing here is more extreme, than what you get overseas.
But we can't confirm whether he's got big nuts or not, though. That's all.
Well, he's admitting that he has got big balls.
We get
a gold medalist.
That's a good reference.
Well, anyone who can go and get like at the age of 16, get a bronze, and then 4 years later turn it into a gold, you don't worry about what they're going to do in retirement. He's obviously bloody driven and very capable, and he'll have a raft of options and the ability to do whatever he wishes, with that sort of attitude and aptitude.
All right.
Oh
Well, I
God,
just
yeah,
that was almost
serious, wasn't
yeah.
it?
It's kind of it's a life of it's a life of looking forward. I just love that, and that is in the basis of the New Zealand Kiwi attitude, is that we look forward, we don't look back and dabble in what was. We're always looking forward, and that's the epitome of our athletes,
Can you
really.
get rid of those old clips of Sports Cafe we're going to run on the show later? I know there's some
Yeah, and
more.
he's a legend. He's a legend down in Queenstown too, which
Yeah, I
is
bet.
such a tight community, right?
Yeah.
So they're going to, all the world's his oyster. Yeah,
Yeah.
beautiful.
I've got another question.
And with all your competing, starting at such a young age, did you have time to be a kid?
Yeah, I did. I did have time to be a kid. But also, that was one of the biggest. I got asked the other day what the biggest sacrifice was that I'd made, and it was probably that. It was probably having to sacrifice that normal life as a child, and especially going through those, I guess, those years of going through puberty and being in high school and going to parties and chasing girls and that sort of thing was something that I didn't really have. And so, I'd say that would, yeah. I'd say, yeah, I had a lot of time to be a kid, but also I missed out on maybe those more normal things.
Well, the good news is that you can still be my age and think like a child. So, you don't have to. You don't have to grow up.
Be nice if you did, though, wouldn't it?
Mark was actually too busy sunning himself in Italy to send through a question. But do you have any travel tips for him? Because he's actually had a few travel issues. So, any tips in traveling?
Travel tips. I think, honestly, I think the biggest travel tip is not drinking on planes or not drinking in airports. And I know that's kind of boring. Like, that's a little bit of a boring travel tip because it's pretty fun to have, a beer on the plane or a beer in the lounge, but God, it messes you up, eh? And when you don't do it, you notice it like crazy.
Mecca, did you hear that?
Yeah, we've got diametric views on that, funnily enough.
Yeah, is yours a little bit different?
Oh yeah, I mean, I do like to have just a couple of champagnes just to sort of, calm the nerves, and then a sleeping pill.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would say definitely take the edge off if you can.
Yeah,
Not
it's the
so
combo.
much you
It's the
miss the
combo you
plane, but
require.
yeah, I got wheelchair onto a plane once. Don't go that far, but yeah,
They let you
easy.
on.
Speaking of wheelchairs on planes, isn't it strange the number of people who are now getting wheelchaired off them? I think they've cottoned on to the fact that, if you call for a wheelchair, they don't critique why, and you get the front of the queue. So it's literally, there's like every flight you come off, there's eight wheelchairs waiting to wheel people who, a few of them, sure, they look like they need wheelchairs, but I'd say the vast majority, 60%, 70%, nah, mate, you're just pulling a ruse.
Yep, totally.
Keep an eye on it.
The Disney World theory.
Oh, yeah. Well, they end up on that little electric buggy as well that takes you right through the big airports past everyone. You look at this like this guy's,
I got one of them at Doha that was driving past, and I just jumped on the back of it like
I nearly
you do
stole
on the
one.
Bus.
Yeah.
All right, one last question from the Salizzo Files.
Lee would like to know about the great Harry Rutger. He was picked to represent New Zealand at the Winter Olympics, but he didn't really reach his potential, primarily because he showed up in Montreal for the Summer Olympics. Was he a big influence on your career?
I've actually never heard of him, and I know that that could make me pretty ignorant to it, but sounds like a great bloke.
Thanks, Nico. I really appreciate your time, mate. Pity we couldn't get you in the studio, but next time we'll get you in there, right?
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, that sounds really good.
I'm amazed he hasn't heard of Harry Rutger. He was a legend. You know, admittedly, he showed up to the Winter Olympics in the summer, which was a stuff up by anyone's standards, and he lost a lot of credibility from that. But he went on to other things, broke his back in about 19 places at one point.
Yeah.
Down in Queenstown.
What year are we talking?
We're talking early 70s when he broke his back.
A little bit before.
I slipped up outside a pizza bar on the ice and his sort of tailbone. Ended up getting a transplant, a baboon transplant from his back.
You're right.
But that rejected him. So he...
So what was his sport in the Winter Olympics? What was
it? Downhill.
Downhill what?
Just the straight downhill.
Like no skis or anything?
No, ski, the downhill. You know, downhill the giant...
Slalom.
The downhill giant slalom halfpipe.
Yeah, but it didn't really matter because he got there when everyone else is in their athletics gear. So, you know, it's kind of...
But like you, Rick, it's just a point straight and let physics do the job.
Yeah.
Never turn.
He's Bomb. Doing waxing in Queensland, just does all the waxing now.
Back waxing?
Yeah, people's backs and stuff. They can do their skis if they want, but normally just their backs and... And
what's his name?
Yeah, regions.
Harry Rutger. Yeah.
He was a Dutch originally, I think, and then he moved to New Zealand.
Okay.
With the Coburgers.
Right. Okay. Good to know. Right. If you all started training today, what sport, and we'll give you 4 years, what sport could you go to at the Olympics and not come last?
Well, I would say this. It would be about not embarrassing yourself, right?
Yeah.
To be honest, I would go in the 100-meter final because you face it, they're doing it in under 10 seconds.
Yeah. I'm not liking the chances.
At your best, in my heyday, I'd probably do it in 13.
Ooh, that's not bad.
But it's be slower than that than now. But what I mean is it's still only 2 or 3 seconds between you and the winner.
30 meters.
Plus, yeah, Bolt pulled a hammy in the final. I could do the same.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where I thought you were going with it. It's you know, you come at you make a big show and dance because the camera's on you for that, and you pretend like you're going to do it, and you don't look like you're going to, but you put this aura of invincibility out, and then straight out of the blocks and bang a hamstring, and then you just walk off really gutted.
Yeah, totally. People will never know. And just what could have been. And what you can do interviews, and you can be really annoyed. Talk about next year, your sponsors.
What sport would you do, Macca, to not come last at the Olympics?
I hate to bring it back to shooting, but I will. I would do, you know, the one where they put the patch over one eye and they just sort of lie there. I think I'd probably go for that. You know, A, nobody watches it.
You just have to make sure you put the patch on the right eye, though, because you could be just...
Well, yeah. Either that or as you're coming in, you accidentally shoot yourself in the foot, you know. It's still there. It'd be another way out, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
But I reckon you could go all right with 4 years of training, just lying down, getting your breathing technique right.
Yep.
And just, you know, I reckon that'd be quite good.
Yeah, you'd probably do
all right, Lana.
Reckon you could bluff your way through
well,
that.
Well, I would have gone for the same thing. Or bowls or something.
Mm-hmm. Bowls?
I think.
Curling would be another good one.
Curling.
It? You know, just for, yeah.
Is that normal?
Yeah,
but
it's something in
winter,
the whole.
Yeah, winter. Winter's different altogether. You got the toboggan thing, you know, you could.
Yeah,
oh, we could probably get a cool runnings. The four of us, we could definitely make a team.
You think we should
with the weight between the you two, putting these two at the
I front. Have to be at the front. I have to be the guy that just the heavy guy at the front.
And
I hate to break it to you, Lana, but that means you and I got to push them.
You're still fast. You'll be all right.
It'll be the slowest start in history and the fastest crossing of the line.
Once we got away, they would catch up.
Oh yeah, that fourth corner, mate, you'd be straight up and out.
Oof. It's stopping would be the problem. All right, now we've got a real...
No, what would you do? Come on.
What would I do?
You have to participate.
Yeah, Winter Olympics.
Can you play cards at the Olympics?
No, I think... I thought I'd like to do the skeleton, you know, where you lie down you know.
And they would like to be a skeleton, which is, you know, not going to happen, mate. I mean,
what's the skeleton?
Do you think I'm going to be a fat skeleton?
What's the skeleton?
Skeleton, it's like the luge, but it's
one guy. Right?
Are you talking about the Winter Olympics?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to bring in our special guest. Right, joining us now, a proper athlete, former warrior now with the Bulldogs, Marcelo Montoya. Taylor, you're not supposed to be on. It's not an opportunity to plug your podcast. This is a serious sports interview.
Well, I thought I'd splice things up and actually talk about something worthwhile. So,
oh, good.
Now's the perfect time to talk about the podcast.
And it's a good chance for you, Rick, to maybe pick their brains on how to make a proper podcast.
Yeah, probably. You know, get some advice. It could be like a counselling session, actually.
So you guys do the Montoya's podcast, which is about the Montoya's, which is you. How do you do it?
Good question. So if you want tips, we can take it offline and I'll let you know. But pretty much we're just married and we just go through life together and thought, why not record it and let the world in on this? And, yeah, so far we're not divorced yet, so it seems to be going pretty well.
We're doing all right. But at the minute, as we speak, we've got girls upstairs having a nap.
Yeah.
No one here looking after it. So as soon as they cry, we're running away from this. All right?
So having a camera follow your relationship, I mean, I've often thought that would actually be quite a good thing and that it would, you know, create a scenario where you have to kind of behave, you know, when you want to say, oh, like, yeah, so you'd have to be polite.
Yeah, good question.
You'd have to be courteous at all times. Yeah, good thing. Good thing for a relationship, potentially.
Well, I feel like it works in my favour because some things that I'd be too scared to confront Marcelo about, I can because we are surrounded by producers and engineers and stuff, so he kind of still has to be nice to me even though I'm taking the absolute piss out of him. So it's worked wonders for me.
So, Marcelo, you've had a great season for the Bulldogs, but you've just had a neck operation. What's the story there?
Yeah. No, it's just something kind of minor. I kind of injured my neck around Magic Round and it just wasn't getting any better. There was a bit of bone that was rubbing on some nerve. So I just had to go, like, better go in there, just remove some bone to free up that nerve so I'm not getting any sensation down my arm. But it wasn't a major kind of surgery.
And when are you back?
They reckon about 4 to 6 weeks. So, yeah, fingers crossed.
So that's 4 to 6 weeks you can help around the house.
Oh, please, mate.
Sorry? The police? Where?
Where's Mark at?
He's in Italy.
Mark's in the north of Italy, just down by Portofino.
We were asking how we would add more fun into professional sport. If you guys would like to contribute in any way, Taylor, have you got an opinion on something that you think we could do to add more fun into sport?
I'm a big fan of the cheerleaders, having started off as being one many years ago.
Waste of time.
So I would find a way to get the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders over for a round. I think that would be huge.
Yep.
Yeah, that would.
And suited you at the time when we met that I was a cheerleader, so shut up.
Yeah.
It's a waste of money. You know what I mean?
No.
Send them to Italy where Mark is.
I was going to say, they're already here. Yeah.
Like cheerleaders, but you've... So, Marcelo, you don't like cheerleaders, but you've married one?
Thank you.
Not that I don't like them. I don't like the concept of them.
Do you say that on the podcast? Are you that honest?
100%.
Good.
Yeah, you got to be honest on a podcast, right?
And Taylor, what's your opinion about wingers?
They're a waste of space. They should cut the line down at centres. I think that should be the new winger, centres. Yes. They're very athletic and agile. They catch high balls and stuff. But there's like a joke that people say, isn't like, wingers aren't real football players.
Well, that's awkward.
Yeah, it's awkward. A cheerleader could step into the wing spot. They're just on the other side of the line, really. Anyway.
Well, see, that would be a good thing for sport, wouldn't it? That would add to the viewing experience.
On the bench seat should be filled with 7 cheerleaders as opposed to...
No, that's a good idea. Get rid of wingers and put 2 cheerleaders on the outsides.
It's a fair point.
Done. I'll step in.
They're already sitting there.
Yeah.
And a few teams, that's already happened, hasn't it?
Well, you played on the wing, didn't you?
A few dandies on some wings.
Yeah.
You've been injured for a while. You've been obviously watching the season. Warriors having a pretty good season. A few losses of late, one last week. Going pretty well, though. Thoughts on them?
Yeah, for sure. Look, they're obviously a well-structured team. very well coached. You know, I'm still very close with some of the boys there. So it's awesome to see them going very well. And obviously seeing, you know, their fans getting behind them, it's awesome, you know, all that up the wires. And then all the bandwagoners that have jumped on. So, yeah.
I mean, you have a pretty amazing local support too for the Bulldogs, don't you? Particularly when you play at your home ground, it's pretty manic.
Yeah, I think it's very similar when you look back to the 2023 season we had at the Warriors when I was there. You know, the Bulldogs, when I was there last time, we had a few tough years, and obviously the fan base has always been massive, right? So I think the season they kind of had last year, it gave them the belief, and then obviously this year we're going all right as well. So I think for us, it's about just controlling what we can on the field and then letting them kind of take charge in what they want to do. And it's similar to the Warriors fans, like they're getting behind their team that they love, and we're very lucky to have a staunch supporter network.
What's that like, though, as a professional footballer? You obviously move from one club to another. That's your job. You know, you take the best deal, the best offer. How do you, when you do that, what's your relationship like with your previous club?
Oh, look, I love the Warriors, you know, and obviously now at the Dogs, I'm a local junior at the Bulldogs. So for me, this club gave me my debut and gave me my opportunity. But then, like you said, at some stages you have to leave to go elsewhere to chase another opportunity, and the Warriors gave me that opportunity. And we love New Zealand. We really, really enjoyed New Zealand. We love the people in New Zealand. We still think that people in New Zealand are better than the people here in Sydney. and I double down on that. But it's a great club. Like, it is. It really is. But, yeah, like you said, at times you got to move on, and that's what we had to do. You know, we've got two kids now that we have to provide for, so that's what we had to kind of take into consideration.
So if you're just going out to left field here, if you weren't playing league, what would be your sport of choice?
The two, it'll be tennis or an F1 driver. But I think I'd pick tennis. I just feel like, I don't know, I feel like individual sports alone, mentally, what the athlete has to go through, but especially, you know, like, I mean, F1 driver's going around a corner at about 300 clicks, and he's got to make, like, one decision, otherwise he can kill himself. And then when you're on the tennis court, you got no coach on the sideline, you got no trainers telling you what to do, you got to literally adapt on the run. So that's what I love about those kind of sports.
Taylor, how do you think he'd go as a Formula One driver?
Not as good as me. I've seen how we drive. I'm way better. Way heavier on the right foot. Yeah.
She'd be good. She'd be good on the, like, when she's on the straight.
Yeah.
Not necessarily going around corners. She took out a garage in New Zealand when we were living there.
Thought about boxing. Of course, there's a Sonny Bill Gallen fight tonight, later tonight. Thoughts on that fight? And also yourself, ever thought about boxing? Obviously, do a bit in training that anyway.
Is that for Marcelo or Taylor?
Oh, Marcelo, yeah.
I think they would be a better boxer than me.
I do boxer size class once a week, actually.
So, I probably wouldn't box. I've lost enough brain cells running the ball back. So I'd rather just not box, to be honest. I don't know. I think that's even tough as well. Like, you're going out there, you're putting yourself, you know, you're going to get knocked out at some stage, and the world's going to criticize you. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I don't know. It's probably too late for me to chase that goal, but I'd rather not get knocked out.
Taylor, you know, having a husband who's a sort of, you know, a long time Bulldogs player, have you always been a Bulldogs supporter?
No, I grew up in Cronulla, so my family are fanatic Sharks fans. Like, even my mum painted my brother's bedroom the big Sharks logo growing up, so I was forced to support the Sharks. But then as soon as I got my license and I left the Shire, I auditioned for the Bulldogs cheerleading gig and I got that. So then I was like, cool, I'll go for them now. And then obviously met Marcelo and I was like, I'm all in.
That's a love story. There you go, romance and sport. Yeah. Who'd have thought?
Yeah. All right, well, just to we'll let you go and all the best for the podcast. And here's a little taste of when we were with the Warriors. You know, we're always one of those shows to like look forward. You know, we don't like to look back. This is from 2001.
What about you, ladies? Is there a certain fashion that you...
These rubbish bags are really handy.
And a children's umbrella.
Yeah, we've all got them. Gumboots, man. They're the only way to go on wet weather, eh?
See, I've got my boots too.
Have you? Oh, jeez. Yeah. You got better legs.
While the game was on, the reserve of the Warriors were on charge of the air conditioning.
Look at him. He's been... What? Yeah!
We're going to win the NRL.
We made Sharky bait out of it. We had a good team. Now we go to the Roosters. We're going to pluck and stuff the Roosters.
Good story, guys.
If we can play like that every week, you know, we should be in the top eight at the end of the year. And we're looking forward to that.
But I thought you are already in the top eight, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, we want to stay there. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wow. You are in my top eight.
Ah, brilliant.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now, last week we talked about wingsuit flying, and Lana and Mark both said, I'd love to try that.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah. I did.
Yeah.
Now is your time. Yes.
You didn't say I'd love to try that?
Probably didn't hear the question properly. Don't know if I would, actually.
Wouldn't you? Well, to help make your dreams come true, Lana. We've managed to find annuals, Macca. I couldn't think of anything I'd love more to throw you both out of the plane. And so we got contact by someone and introduced us to Hamish, who is a record-breaking Australian wingsuit flyer. Is that what we call you?
I'm pretty close. I would preface that by saying I'm a Kiwi. And I just competed in Australia.
Oh, brilliant. That's even
good
better.
Good research, Rick.
Oh, well.
Yeah. You're a beauty, mate.
But you were in Australia at one stage in your life.
I was, yes.
How'd you get into it, mate? This is one of the great sports of all time. It's basically the fruit bat.
How do you get into the suit or into the sport?
Into the sport, both.
So I guess, like a lot of things, I probably saw it on the internet first and thought, damn, that looks pretty cool. I might try and terrify my family and get into that sport. So I went in, and I kind of also had this internal theory that it would be a good distraction in the weekend, you know. It would get you off the bears and, you know, give you a cool purpose. But it turns out after you do about 5 or 6 wingsuit jumps in a day, you feel like you've accomplished something and you deserve bears. So that didn't quite play out in the end.
I think I need a few beers before I competed, to be honest, in that competition. But you said you were competing in Australia, so obviously in a competition environment. How do they judge it? How do they judge, you know, is it like distance or how are they judging?
So you're one third of the way there. So for a performance competition, you compete over distance, speed and time, and you do 9 jumps, 3 of each. So what happens is you jump out of the plane and you go straight down for about 3,000 feet, and then you level out and you fly as far as you can or as fast as you can or for as long as you can. And I broke the time record, so I flew for spent the most time in the sky in that performance window. The really tricky thing about wingsuiting, performance flying in particular, is you can't actually look forwards, because if you look forwards, it's like a big break. Your head in your face acts as a break.
Oh,
so you're actually looking between your legs and backwards. So it's kind of like 3D Formula One, but using the rearview mirror. And you have to imagine points on the ground to kind of guide you.
Is it really good for people with small heads?
Small heads, big heads, girls, guys.
Everyone.
Do you have to have done skydiving before you... had you done a lot of normal skydiving before you got into suit skydiving?
Yeah, so generally you have to do around 200 or 300 skydives before you're allowed to start wingsuiting or allowed to learn. Someone will teach you. So I did around 200.
If there's a couple of people I know, can we make an exception for that and just sort of maybe give them a couple of parachute jumps and then throw them out?
I only know of one person in the world you can do a tandem wingsuit with, and I think he's in Europe. So we can always contact him.
Mark, you're in Europe.
But definitely normal skydives, you know, that's very easy. I'm happy to organize that.
So when they're threading the needle, I think it's called the needle, there's like some of those amazing, rock formations, and they jump off for higher and they've got to come down almost boom, through a rock hole. Mm-hmm. You're clearly not looking back between your legs at that stage. You're all heads up. That's high risk, though. There's a lot of people who miss the hole.
Yeah, so there you don't want to miss the hole. What they're doing is base jumping, so it's a little bit different to skydiving. It's the same wingsuit, but different gear. Those jumpers, they have one parachute. So if their gear malfunctions or they open their parachute too late, they run out of altitude while they're flying, they die, unfortunately. But skydivers, we have two parachutes. So if one fails, we have a second. And if we're unconscious, we have a computer that will open our reserve, so we survive.
Can you guys just carry on? Mecca, you just carry on. Because, hold on, Mecca. So DoorDash, who I love. Like, I must say thank you to DoorDash for giving me all this food. And it's fair to say that some of the food may have been coming during the week, not just through the show. But we've got some tacos here from Brokeback Tacos. So you guys carry on talking. I just hand them out. Carry on, Mecca.
Did you say broke back tacos?
What's it called?
Yeah, sorry, mate. It's not your favourite movie, mate. It's Broke Boy Tacos. It's the best in town. Broke Back Tacos. Sorry.
So there are two different sports, base jumping and wingsuit flying. So what's the difference between the suits? Is there any sort of difference between them?
The manoeuvrability.
The suits are more or less the same. Sometimes they make the suits out of slightly light, more lightweight material. Because often what they do is they hike up the mountains, which are very high, so your gear needs to be as light as possible. But it's pretty much the same suit.
And back to the competition, you said you get out of the plane and you drop for, say, 3,000 feet and then level out. Is it like surfing? Are you doing that on your own? Do they ever send two people out together at the same time or anything?
Yep. So when we're not doing performance competitions, we jump out in big groups.
Oh, wow.
You know, 20 plus, 10 to 20 is like a big group. And we just fly together, fly under each other, fly in stacks, fly in formations.
So you have a sense of where everyone else is. You can sense that.
Exactly, yeah. Someone will fly the base and everyone knows their slot around that person.
You said you go straight down and then you level out. Is the straight down just to pick up speed?
Exactly, yeah. You want to translate that vertical speed into as much horizontal speed as possible.
Do you have to be good at maths?
No, you don't have to be good at maths. You need to understand kind of basic aerodynamics and flying, and you just need to be brave a little bit.
What's the magic? What's the gravy stroke in the sport? What's the magic moment? You know, when you have score a try in a game of footy, that's amazing feeling. Or if you win the game, what's the moment when you go, oh, this is why I do the sport, this is what I love the most? Is it when you're going straight down vertically and then you pull up into that sort of, or is it when you complete the length? What is it?
So there's a lot of magic moments, but when it comes to the flying, probably the biggest magic moment is when you're flying with smaller groups and you do dynamic flight. So you might fly on your front, fly on your back, fly upside down, go straight down, and then fly up, flare. You can flare up like a plane momentarily and then stall and do barrel rolls, flips, things like that. And that's probably the magic moment.
Are you communicating with those other guys with like headsets or something, or can you be?
No, you can do that, but for the most part, it's just I'm just looking at someone in the eye and just saying left,
and
right,
what sort of altitude are you jumping out at?
We leave a plane roughly at about 13,000 feet.
So how much time do you have in the air?
Compared to a normal skydive, which is about 45 seconds to a minute, we get upwards of 2 minutes, 1.5 minutes, 2 minutes.
Is there any risk of blowing the skin? Like if you were going and you did that flare,
mm-hmm.
can the air pop your, is there any risk? Popping your skin?
You can't pop your skin. Your skin actually inflates. So when you fly, there's some inlets on your suit and it rams air into the suit and it inflates it like a wing. They're very rigid. You can't break it. But if you do what you described, you can do what's called a high-speed stall, and that's the most dangerous thing to do in a wingsuit because you totally lose control and
you had a feeling. That'd be quite have you pulled many of them off?
No, I haven't done a high-speed stall, but I have done all the other fun stuff like going down, up, around and around.
Lee asked last week whether anyone had ever, don't eat the guacamole, mate, it's too noisy. Lee asked me last week whether anyone had landed a wingsuit without opening the parachute, and I looked up on the YouTube, and actually someone had done that, and they landed in like a million cardboard boxes. Yep. But there was also someone landed in water.
So that's a fake. That's not actually real.
No,
the water one.
There's nothing fake on YouTube.
You
thank
can't
you.
Believe everything that you read, Rick.
I believe everything on Wikipedia.
It's pretty believable. It looks like they pulled it off, but no, only the cardboard box one I believe is real.
Yeah, because Rick thought we had these cats jumping off diving boards, and Rick thought that was real as well, and all sorts of other animals. So that's a total.
I knew the dinosaurs weren't real, but I thought the cats might have been.
And Santa.
Do you post a lot on social media when you jump out of planes and stuff?
Basically, that's all I share. I kind of, in my free time, I identify as a wingsuiter. Oh, so nice. It's just all you see is me jumping out of.
So what's your handle? What's your Instagram? Or how do we watch the stuff?
If you want to watch skydiving, you can follow me at HamishB28.
Cool.
And you're going to see wingsuiters jumping out of hot air balloons.
And like the cannonball, do you go to parties and nightclubs in your suit?
Well, no, I don't. I've thought about it. It's made out of like a very plasticky material, so it's actually very hot and sweaty inside, kind of like a rubbish bag. So it would be uncomfortable for anything more than 15 minutes, or if the wind wasn't blowing at like 100 knots in your face.
Have you got a suit we could have a look at?
Yep.
Oh, cool.
So this is what the suit looks like.
Wow.
No, you could easily wear that in a nightclub.
Yeah, so what happens is you unzip it. Down the middle.
The last time I saw somebody in a suit like that, it had Velcro over it, and the little people were throwing them in a dartboard. Remember them? Right. That was a long time ago, but
yeah,
so much fun.
There was a different time, yeah. Though. Yeah.
So then you zip it up like this, all the way up, and then you're flying. Like
your sleeves up. Oh, yeah. Right.
Hey, look at that.
You flip the wings if you really need to go fast.
Flips your arms.
Yeah. It's a bit human cannonball-esque, isn't it? It's really weird. Yeah. Old days.
Maybe we get rid of the cannonball.
Can you just throw your arms above your head and go, direct?
Well, I can't. My arms stop here.
But it's also got a bit of an Elvis vibe as well, hasn't it? Elvis in the 70s, your tassels kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's beautiful.
Some have, like, 3D printed winglets on them and fins and stuff. Wow.
Awesome.
They get pretty crazy.
Well, there's a sport, Mackie, do this, but with paintball guns, so you're sort of dogfighting with people. That'd be quite cool, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that'd be amazing. Yeah. Yeah,
we actually, we recreated a wingsuit mid-air refuel, like a fighter jet going to a refueling plane. So we hung a beer funnel out between someone's legs and put a horn on someone's helmet and got them to fly their wingsuit horn into the funnel behind another wingsuiter.
Right. Why did I think that you may not be normal?
This is perfect. No, he's bloody strangely brilliant.
Yes.
I feel like he's magnificent.
Random amount of chaos.
And we also made it squirt water out, so like there was actual fuel. We put a bladder on it.
Did you go to Otago University?
No, I didn't. I defected and went to university in Australia.
Oh, yeah. I told you he's Australian.
Wow. You would have been brilliant down there, mate. You'd have been well received at Otago University.
All right, mate.
Thanks, Hamish.
Right, now joining us from the TAB, Paul. G'day, mate.
G'day, Rick. How you going, mate?
I'm going good. We're all here, but Mac is in Italy this week.
Uncle Paulie.
G'day, Mac.
How are you, mate?
Good. Yeah, doesn't look the worst for you there, to be fair.
No. It's delightful today.
Yeah. You couldn't get a more sort of mundane answers. View behind you.
You know, it's a bit like my personality.
Just a picture of something, anything. Yeah. A light switch even would be good.
I'll work on that.
At the front is this amazing place, but he's just picked this grey wall.
It does make you a focus.
In the pantry. Yeah, it's okay.
But you make it, Paul, you being in shot. Yeah, Cheers, mate. Try not to insult Paul, please.
No, that wasn't insult. I'm just the contrast.
How was the All Blacks performance against France for you? I mean, everyone was picking that.
Yeah, it was great for punters. It was horrible for us. The try scorers, well, it was all the usual suspects once again. Cam Roygaard, Artie Sevier, Cody Taylor, Tupou Vaai.
You had a bet, didn't you? There was a three-way paying $14.50, I think, for Sevier, Jordan and Roygaard. That would have hit you a bit.
There were a number of things that hit us in that test match. That was just one of them. Yeah, it was a great win for the All Blacks, and it was a great win for most Kiwi punters on Saturday night.
When you watch a game like that and that stuff's happening, do you have, oh, that's so good, and then you go, oh, man, that's costing us a fortune?
Yep, the dollar signs just keep sort of adding up inside my head every time someone scores a try. And then I go, oh, yeah, but we're going to win, so I'll have another beer and we'll get on with it.
So how are you going to make money this week? How's the TAB going to make money this week?
Well, I can't believe the promotions team have got a little promo for the third test between the All Blacks and France. Just place a first try scorer bet in the third test, and if your player doesn't score the first try, get your money back up to $20 as bonus cash. So as soon as the teams are named, those first try scorer markets will be out. You'll be able to get on and have a go.
And what about the Lions series? How do you see that first test for the Lions against Australia?
Well, I can tell you the punters see it one way, and it's all about the Lions. They've been very impressed with how they've gone about their business. That win against the Anzacs last week was very, very good. The fact that they kept them scoreless, I think, really sort of garnered the sort of the attention of a number of punters. They're out in, I think they're about $1.30, $1.33 to win the first test. The Lions and the Aussies are out $3.30, $3.40 the last time I had a look. And I thought that might be enough to get a wee bit of cash flowing their way. But at the moment, there's a whole heap of support for the Lions.
Didn't the Argies beat the Lions recently?
Yep.
They beat England.
No. The Argies.
Oh, no, on the way over. You're right. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I would have thought Aussie would have been, you know, a half decent look at you know, bad odds.
The only thing that could be interesting is that Joe Schmidt's a smart man, and he's held a lot of people back from the provincial games. So the Lions haven't really seen, like when you played them in 93, Macca for Otago, that was the top Otago team. It was full of All Blacks, you know, you took them to task. We haven't seen a lot of the Wallabies in these provincial games. So, you know, that's the only hope for Australia, that they've been holding some stuff back and the Lions might get a surprise that they're playing better Australians than they've played so far. Shit, that sounded like a real sports broadcast for a moment. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it was just stunned silence.
All right, Paul, anything? What are you up to this weekend?
Well, of course, the third test between the All Blacks and the French, it'll be very interesting to see what side Razor goes with on Saturday night. And, of course, the Warriors will be over in Newcastle taking on the Knights this weekend. They did us no favours last weekend when they beat the West Tigers. Leka Halasima, he must be one of the most favourite players of Warriors supporters because he just keeps on scoring when they need him to. So, yeah, the Wars are about $1.46 last time I looked, and the Newcastle Knights are about $2.65. So, at the moment, Wars punters are very, very happy with the way their team is going, and they're getting on. And I can tell you, they backed them last week. They backed the Wahine Wars as well, who won against the Parramatta Eels. So, there's plenty of support and plenty of good feelings around the Wars and their nation.
Mm. Do you know when you set the bets at your end? I mean, it's kind of a stupid question, but does any kind of emotion come into it in the sense, you know, because you're looking at the, you know, reality stats and stuff, but if you guys take a real hiding 1 week because everything goes against you, like the week you just had, do you make it more conservative the next week or you just look at what's in front of you?
No, what's in front. Yeah, leave emotion out of the game. The numbers in the long run should work themselves out. So every now and again, things are going to go against you, but stick with the numbers.
If the guys make a bad call, do they get shot? Do they get removed from the equation? Like if they get it really badly wrong, do they get, are they on the chopping block or not? Or is it all computer-based algorithms these days?
There's a whole lot of algorithms and statistics that go into it these days. I used to be a bookie. I'm not anymore. So, yeah, there's your answer.
Oh, that was a bit harsh, Macca.
No, I'm just asking. I mean, it's like if you go to the casino, right, and there's no limit. I've got a theory there. And you're putting, you know, you put $2 on black and you lose, you double it to four. And if you lose, you double it to eight. If you lose, you double it to 16. You will eventually break even, and 50% of the time you're going to win. And when you win, you put it in your pocket. You just get, if you play that game and you don't get greedy, you can't lose.
So do you think, because we're talking about how to improve sport, and so far we've got athletes on roids shooting or blowing up the referees and a drug-induced crowd.
I just want to put in for clarification that I didn't suggest shooting or blowing up the referees. I just suggested that we could do something with the referees. That actually came from Macca and Lee.
It started with you.
That was their contribution to my suggestion.
It really started with you.
Well, it did start with me, but I just was doing a generic conversation starter. Well, not,
you know, I think when we're in court, I think you'll be there as well. I think, yeah.
And it will be on record.
It's interesting the way that you guys...
Public stonings.
Yeah.
I mean, you'd make money out of a public stoning as well.
Yep.
Like if you could buy a cricket ball size rock, you know, for, you know, $15, you know, or a marble size one for $5, I'd be buying, you know, a few cricket balls and, you know, you'd be hurling. And the more you pay, the closer you get to the target. I mean, you could make a huge amount of money out of public stonings.
Beer stubby's good enough for that.
Thank you.
They had the heavy cans, the proper steel cans. You know, if you threw a full can,
arrivederci.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Quick, run while you can.
We'll get out of here, mate. Can you take us with you? All right. Hey, before we go, talking about improving sport, how to make it more fun. This is our legend of the week, this guy. He managed to play 18 holes of golf while hula hooping.
And you play a shot.
Watch him.
Oh, God. So he looks like he's got something wrong with him.
No, it's hula hooping.
Golf wasn't hard enough.
It was hard. It is a very difficult game.
He played an entire round. Look, he doesn't let the hula hoop go.
Has he ended up in the Guinness Book of Records or something, surely, to do this?
I don't know. I'll check on Wikipedia. Look, there he is. He's playing his next shot.
Why else would you do this, though? What sort of achievement? You must want recognition. You must want to win something.
No, well, we've just been suggesting how to make sport more fun. This is making golf more fun. Golf's not that much fun, but put the hula hoops into it.
It wouldn't make it any more fun for me.
It's hard.
Did you see that, Macca?
Pardon me. Yeah, I did. It was, it's odd.
You end up having quite a weird stroke with the hoop right out there. See that?
It might help you with your centre of balance.
Well, you'd get bad rashes and stuff. You know, you'd need to... You know, axe or grease or something to.
I don't know if it's going to fly.
Shape up.
You don't think that was going
to
catch
on? No, I mean, if you ask people, you know, would you go to watch a game of golf, or would you go to watch a guy, you know, doing that? I'm not sure. I mean, maybe there's a number of views on YouTube, but would you pay to watch that?
No.
For 18 holes?
No. No. No, we're not talking about watching it. We're talking about playing it. Doesn't it make golf more fun to play?
I quite like the soccer golf, you know, where you tee up with a soccer ball, and they've got a massive hole, and you've got to kick it. I reckon that'd be quite good fun.
They do that as a rugby with rugby balls as well. It's called rugby golf.
Oh, do they? And do you land it? You must land it in a net rather than a hole.
I didn't watch it that much.
Oh, you could Google it.
Frisbee golf.
Frisbee golf.
Yeah. Rollerblade golf.
Rollerblade
golf.
Sex golf.
Okay, time to exit.
That is a good time to stop the show.
He's in the bunker.
Hole in one, yeah.
Oh, dear.